Not that we're checking up on you or anything.
Yeah, exactly. Great, we're recording. Okay, so for those of you who were here last week, we saw at the end of chapter 11 that Jesus offered to give his people rest from their burdens. So that sounds great, you know, to have rest given by Jesus, but what did the people need rest from? Well, I believe our passage that we're going to be looking at this morning is a continuation of what Jesus is talking about in chapter 11. Chapter 12 starts at that time. You'll also see it further, actually, previously in chapter 11. It says at that time. So at that time, which seems to suggest that chapter 12 continues the theme from the end of chapter 11. And I believe that Jesus reveals in this passage that we're going to be looking at this morning what the burdens are that Jesus gives rest from. For those of you that were here last week, you remember that Mark explained that the burden that the Jewish people had at that time was the pressure from the Jewish leaders with their laws. And I say their laws. It wasn't so much their laws, but God's law. That was a problem, because at that time it didn't even look anything like God's law, because they added so much to it. To help us understand this, Matthew gives us two instances of how Jesus was challenged about the keeping of his law and how he responded to that challenge. Firstly, in verses 1 to 8, if you look with me, it shows us the authority of the Sabbath law. Matthew starts this section by painting us a picture of what's happening. Jesus and his disciples are walking through the grain fields, and the disciples are hungry and start to pluck heads of grain from a field to eat. So what did the disciples do wrong? Were the Pharisees unhappy with the disciples' behaviour because they plucked heads of grain from a field that did not belong to them? Not at all. The edges of a field were not normally harvested, so that vulnerable people like the poor and the hungry and foreigners and orphans and widows could gather food for themselves. I don't want to spend too long looking at this, but it seems that the owner of this field, where the disciples were gathering grain, was obeying Leviticus chapter 19, 9 to 10, which I'll read for you. You don't have to look it up. It says, "When you reap the harvest of your land, do not reap to the very edges of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. Leave them for the poor and the foreigner." So this was something that was very normal at that time. This command was put in place by a God of great compassion and love for his chosen people, and those who were regarded as foreigners also to Israel. So what were the Pharisees unhappy about? Well, if you look at verse 2, it tells us, "When the Pharisees saw this, they said to him, 'Look, your disciples are doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath.'" In the rabbinical law, it dealt with the command to rest on the Sabbath and came up with 39 principles or principal works that were forbidden, which was subsequently divided into a further 6 minor categories under each major heading. In using this rule book, they were therefore able to condemn the plucking of the heads of corn as reaping and the rubbing of them in their hands as threshing. So the Pharisees, in adding a structure of regulations to this law that was given by God, looked to help people obey the law more closely, or at least look like they're obeying the law more closely. It helped people keep a hedge around the law so that it didn't break the law. And it was these additional laws about the Sabbath that the Pharisees are bringing before Jesus now. And notice, excuse me, that the accusations aren't even aimed at Jesus, but actually it's aimed at the behaviour of the disciples. So what is Jesus' response? Does he turn around and tell off his disciples, or give excuses to the Pharisees that his disciples are just hungry and just leave them alone, it's all right? Well, let's have a look. Verse 3, he answers, "Haven't you read what David did when he and his companions were hungry? He entered the house of God, and he and his companions ate the consecrated bread, which was not lawful for them to do, but only for the priests. Or haven't you read in the law that the priests on Sabbath duty in the temple desecrate the Sabbath and are yet innocent? See, Jesus begins his response with a question about two instances in the Old Testament where the law was broken and it was condemned. Jesus is addressing men who would have been very learned about the Jewish law and would have known their scriptures extremely well. He appeals to what they know and twice phrases his questions with, "Have you not read?" Jesus gives two examples or case studies involving these who the Pharisees would have held in very high regard. Firstly, King David, who was chosen by God to rule over his people, and the priests, who were chosen by God to lead his people in worship to God. Again, I don't want to dwell on these stories for too long, but let's have a look at what is actually going on in these stories that Jesus is quoting from. So what's happening in the first story, which is found in 1 Samuel 21, verses 1 to 6. Here we find David, the greatest king to have ever ruled Israel, is on the run from Saul. In trying to escape Saul, David has taken with him some faithful warriors who in all their travelling have become really hungry. David approaches the priest where they stop, in the village where they stop, Ahimelech, and asks if he has any food to eat. Ahimelech tells David he doesn't have any food apart from the consecrated bread that only the priests would have been allowed to eat at that time. So Ahimelech freely gives this consecrated bread to David and his men for one reason. They were in hungry and in need. Secondly, Jesus uses the example of the priests who work on the Sabbath. Now, to work on the Sabbath was strictly forbidden. We're not just talking about undertaking paid work on the Sabbath. In Numbers 15, we're actually told of a man who was stoned to death for collecting sticks for firewood on the Sabbath. That is how serious it was for the Jews to rest and not work on the Sabbath. So here, Jesus is making a point to the priests in carrying out their daily work or day-to-day work on the Sabbath and are breaking the Sabbath laws in the temple. And yet, they are considered innocent. Why would the zealous Pharisees consider the priests innocent? It's because they understood that there was a need for the priests to serve in the temple on the Sabbath. As well as using the two Old Testament examples that the Pharisees would have been very familiar with, Jesus also quotes from Hosea 6, verse 6, which in our passage is at verse 7. "If you had known what these words mean, 'I desire mercy, not sacrifice,' you would not have condemned the innocent." Jesus boldly states that despite these scholars' knowledge of Scripture, none of them have actually understood what it means, and that their understanding has been shown in the way they've acted. So what does this phrase mean? In saying, "I desire mercy, not sacrifice," does it mean that God doesn't want us to live sacrificial lives? No, by no means. What Jesus is saying here is that showing mercy is more pleasing to God than external conformity to the law. This idea is something that we're going to be coming back to in a moment. What's interesting about Jesus' response, though, in verses 3 to 8 of this passage, is that he chooses to reveal who he is in relation to the Sabbath. In responding to the Pharisees' accusation, Jesus decides to end his response by informing the Pharisees, by what authority he has to talk about the Sabbath law. In the space of a few lines, Jesus makes two massive claims about who he is. In verse 6, Jesus declares that one greater than the temple is here. To the Jewish people, the temple was where God dwelt. It was a place where atonement was made for the people. But now the temple isn't needed anymore, because one greater than the temple is here. Jesus is, of course, referring to himself. Later in Matthew, we read that Jesus said he was going to destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days. Or he's at least accused of saying that. He did. Jesus said that he was going to do that because he was actually talking about his death and resurrection. In the same way, Jesus also refers to himself when he states that the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath, in verse 8. In saying this, Jesus is stating that he has total authority over the Sabbath and its laws. What do I mean when I say Jesus has total authority over the Sabbath and its laws? Jesus had a right understanding of the Sabbath because of who he is. A couple of months ago, the famous author Stephen King was interviewed. In this interview, Stephen King was asked about one of his most famous books, The Shining, which was later made into a film starring Jack Nicholson. The interviewer asked Stephen King if he liked the director Stanley Kubrick's interpretation of his story. To my surprise, this was Stephen King's response. No. Cold. And I'm not a cold guy. And I think one of the things that people relate to in my books is the warmth. There is warmth reaching out to the reader and saying, I want you to be part of this. And with Kubrick's The Shining, I felt it was very cold. And he actually did that. Jack Torrance in the movie, so Jack Torrance is the character that Jack Nicholson plays. Jack Torrance in the movie seems crazy from the jump. Shelley Duvall as Wendy is one of the most misogynistic characters to ever be put on film. She is basically just there to scream and be stupid. And that's not the woman I wrote about. In this interview, you really got a sense of Stephen King's disappointment at what was still a very successful film, because it wasn't a full reflection of how he intended it to be portrayed. In a similar way, we can see that happening here in Matthew 12. Jesus is the author of the Sabbath law, and yet the Pharisees have the audacity to pick Jesus up on the matter of a few rules that mere men invented as add-ons to this law. Jesus has the authority to defend the disciples' actions because he created the Sabbath and knew the intentions for which he created it. You may be sitting here this morning thinking this is all well and good, or for some of you standing, no, you're all sitting, good, that's good. You may be thinking this is all well and good, and what does this mean for me? How does what Jesus is saying here apply to our lives? We all need to be honest here, myself included. Too often we can approach these accounts in the Bible between Jesus and the Pharisees and completely distance ourselves from the Pharisees. The truth is that there are times when we invent rules for ourselves and others in the same way the Pharisees did. Times when we can be legalistic about something and in doing so miss the purpose of it. It can be all too easy to judge others according to our own rules and ways of doing things. We may have the best of intentions in holding these views and wanting others to follow our lead, but we can all too easily miss the point of why we do what we do. Most of the time we don't even verbalise or act out our judgmental, legalistic opinions. It can be as easy as turning up to BC3 on a Sunday morning and judging in your heart what someone is wearing, the way they pray out loud in the service, the style of worship, or even the ineloquent preacher. The next occasion when the Pharisees try to trap Jesus is not so much the authority of the Sabbath law, but the purpose of the Sabbath law. In verses 9 to 14, we see a change of scene, but the same main characters, Jesus and the Pharisees. Jesus has moved on from the grain fields and has entered the temple. If we look at verse 9, going on from that place, he went into their synagogue. and a man with a shriveled hand was there. Looking for a reason to bring charges against Jesus, they asked him, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath?" The Pharisees this time are not simply waiting for something to put blame upon Jesus, but instead are attempting to frame Jesus in the temple. What have they used as bait? A man with a withered hand. This seems quite a good choice, though, of bait, though. So the ailment is not exactly critical, but yet his disability would have probably meant that he wasn't able to work or make a living. Surely Jesus doesn't need to heal this man on the Sabbath, does he? It can wait until another day, can't it? Jesus responds in a similar way to how he did in the previous section. He answers with a question. However, this time he doesn't use an Old Testament story or quote to base the question upon, but instead a situation that would have been very personal and easy for them to relate to. Verse 11, he said to them, "If any of you has a sheep and it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will you not take hold of it and lift it out? How much more valuable is a person than a sheep? Therefore, it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath." To the original hearers of these words, sheep would have not simply been just a pet or harmless animal that they would have wanted to help if it was in distress. It was their livelihood. And if one of their sheep were in danger, then so was part of their income. You see, rescuing a sheep was not purely a selfish action. In the same way as the man with the withered hand, the sheep needs help, both as urgently as each other. Yet how much more valuable is a man's life than a sheep? And it's not just the man with the withered hand who they have a disregard for. They also show no value for Jesus' life, as our verses later show that they plot to destroy Jesus. Jesus' response to the Pharisees' trap does nothing but further infuriate the Pharisees. Surely the Pharisees have missed the point. In trying so hard to trip Jesus up, they seem to have hardened their hearts, and they have no compassion for this man with a withered hand. They have lost sight of the purpose of the Sabbath law and why it was given to them in the first place. In responding to the Pharisees the way Jesus did, he displayed the purposes of God's Sabbath law. Jesus shows us that the purpose of the Sabbath is to bless and help, not to condemn and burden us. God knows us better than we know ourselves, and knew that he needed to give us a command to rest. We can limit Jesus to a list of rules and regulations that we follow. We can come to church on a Sunday, make time for a quiet time each day, serve on a rota at church, strive for integrity at home or work or university, and still miss Jesus' heart in all of this. We can replace faith, mercy and love with discipline and good deeds. Like in this story where Jesus is trying to reveal his character to the Pharisees, how much better would our relationship with him be if we sought after a deeper understanding of who Jesus is and what he offers us? And here is what he came to offer us. Hebrews chapter 4, verses 9 to 11 says, "There remains then a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For anyone who enters God's rest also rests from their works, just as God did from his. Let us therefore make every effort to enter that rest, so that no one will perish by following their example of disobedience." In this passage, the writer of the Hebrews isn't talking about a rest that is needed after going for a run or a cycle, or the kind of rest that you might, you know, that a quiet weekend might give from a busy week. No, this promise of rest is an eternal spiritual rest, of striving after our own salvation. Sabbath rest comes from when we stop depending on ourselves and our own high standards of morality. It comes from desiring Jesus more and more. It comes from loving him with a grateful heart, rather than thinking we can somehow earn his love. That's how we strive to enter that rest. It's not always easy. Giving over control of our lives to Jesus requires obedience, and obedience always involves a choice. We must keep remembering that salvation is based not on good works, but on Jesus' once for all sacrifice on the cross. And anything we do in serving God is all about living for his glory. Let's seek to live lives that glorify God this week.